Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this. Chris Herndale. Chris Herndale joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
It's, of course, Under Pressure, David Bowie, and Queen. Taylor Jenkins acted like it was just another day at practice yesterday, but like I feel like this is the highest pressure game of the regular season so far tonight.
Pretty clearly the highest pressure game. What factors do you point to when you see the pressure?
Well, I mean, the fact that it was already a thing the last time they played Houston that they lost to them twice, and like that was a game that mattered to them, and then they lose again. So the 0-3 against Houston, last chance to play them, combined with coming off your worst loss of the season. And so, like, those two things converge, you know?
Yeah. And then just the simple fact, the truth of the matter is they're also competing with Houston in the standings, like right there in the standings.
Yeah.
And then do you believe at all that how they've played of late and how they play tonight will have any impact on their approach to the trade deadline?
Not hyper specifically. I don't think there's been like a, I don't think it would lead to a major shift. I don't think suddenly you would contemplate something you didn't contemplate before.
Right.
I don't think that, no. So no, I don't think so.
Right. You know, if you're like blasted tonight after getting blasted by the Knicks, doesn't create greater urgency or something or whatever to.
I mean, maybe at the margins.
Deals are the deals.
Maybe,
you know,
at the margin, but I don't think, again, I don't think suddenly something that had previously not been contemplated.
Right.
It's contemplated.
Right. You know? That's right. So we did have news, though, just as you walked in.
Yes.
What's the injury news?
Injury update for the Grizzlies. Ja Morant, who was not on the injured list at all. There was no one unexpected on the injury list at all yesterday. And now Ja Morant has been added to the injury list as questionable with right shoulder soreness. The right shoulder, of course, is the shoulder where he had the torn labrum last season. He had the joint sprain, separate injury, same shoulder earlier this season. You know, it's not, doesn't strain, you know, credibility. He might have some shoulder soreness given the history of that shoulder. He's listed as questionable, as we've discussed before. Most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, questionable means you're still going to play.
You were there yesterday?
I was there yesterday.
Was he looking like himself?
True confessions. We waited for like an hour to get in. And finally I was like, I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. And as the time I was in the bathroom, they opened it up. So I got there, and when I got there, Ja Morant was not on the court. Had he just been leaving the court? I couldn't tell you. I didn't see Ja Morant yesterday.
He didn't talk yesterday.
He did not. We got Zach Edey, who had very little to say, and Jalen Wells, who had slightly more, but still very little to say in honor of their rising stars designations, and then, you know, Taylor Jenkins talked, and I put some of that out on social media yesterday.
And he, but then John won't talk today, presumably, if you're on.
That would be my guess. Typically, like, if you're on the injury report, you don't talk to media, but I don't know. I mean, I can't. I am going to go there after the show, but I don't know what's going to happen there.
And of course they'll downplay it, right? I mean, what this is critical for it. No one's going to say, and it's not must win. Here's the truth. It is an interesting, like, you lose this game, you're the same place in the standings.
Yeah.
You and even if in the end you end up playing Houston in the playoffs, you can beat them in the playoffs. Like, there's nothing must win about this
must
game.
Must win is just one of those phrases that's entered the way we talk about sports lexicon. That's kind of a useless phrase.
So what is the significance then?
Is it only
psychological for us and for them?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, they've lost six straight against teams above the playoff line, as I wrote about earlier this week. They've lost all three against Houston. They're coming off their worst loss of the season. I think there's doubt creeping in about, like, okay, they have a good record, but how do they look against the good teams? And I think you want to show something in that situation. And I think I think if you lose the game at home in that situation, I think that impacts you. If you lose it badly, I think it impacts you even more. And so, yeah, I think it's a meaningful game. It's also national television, the whole shebang.
The previous games, they got demolished in the first, but the other two were pretty much coin flips, right?
They were close in the end. One of those, Houston was up big, and the Grizzlies sort of came back, and Houston missed a lot of free throws. You can always pick apart games, but, like, you know,
it was non-competitive.
Everything that happens in the game is a component of the game, and it is what it is. And they both ended up being games up for grabs in the last minute. Yeah.
And what do you? What's the challenge, particularly with Houston?
I think the size and physicality, the defensive tenacity, size, physicality. I think if you go back to the game early, the first game that they played against Houston, game two or whatever, I mean, Amen Thompson and Tari Eason were just out-physicaling, you know, whether it's Shake LaRavia or John Conchar or Luke Kennard or Zach Edey. They were just gobbling up rebounds because they were just faster. They were either bigger and or faster, and some, you know, to the ball than those guys. And I think that kind of physicality on the perimeter is been, you know, Dylan Brooks, so throw him in there too. I think that's a team Grizzlies have more turnover problems against because, like, the ball pressure is greater. The ability to muck up passing lanes is greater. So I think that level of, like, defense, particularly on the wing and at the forward positions, has been a problem for the Grizzlies.
Now, since they've got Gigi Jackson back,
right,
he's at least some athleticism, some pop, some whatever, but right, they don't have Vince Williams.
No, and I think the Vince and Marcus thing, they're still gonna they're gonna be missing them for all. Marcus may have played that first game, but they're gonna be missing Vince for all four of these games and both of them for these last three, and I think this is a matchup in particular that they could really use those guys. Yeah,
and we did get an update yesterday on Vince Williams, and it was what did you make of that?
I had an inkling that it was going to be something like that. It's going a little slower than they had wanted it to, or that they thought it would. Maybe a month ago, I had asked Taylor Jenkins a month ago about, you know, do you expect Gigi Jackson and Vince Williams to play this month? And he said yes, and I think that was what the organization thought at that point. And Gigi has come back, and Vince is doing stuff. Vince was on the court yesterday when we came in. He was on the court doing shooting drills, and, like, Vince has been doing stuff. But whatever they do, where they determine, okay, it's ready, you can start playing now. They haven't quite gotten there yet. So instead of, like, I think at one point, probably fairly recently, they probably thought he was going to be able to play in this game, right? And now they think it needs a little bit more time, so they changed it to a week-to-week designation. Week-to-week doesn't necessarily even mean it would be a week. It doesn't mean it would be 2 weeks. I think we are in the be alert for the upgrade on Vince Williams zone, the upgraded outfield, the upgrade to whatever, but we're not all the way there yet, you know?
And in case people didn't see what Taylor Jenkins said, what were his thoughts yesterday, generally speaking?
Oh, I mean, we had asked a bunch of questions and gave long answers to all of them. So there's not a headline from, well, this is what Taylor Jenkins thought today.
Let's take the New York stuff. What happened again? Was that an aberration? Like the Hubie Brown?
I asked him about the turnovers in that game, and he gave a very long, very detailed answer that's really similar to answers he's given in the past. And he couldn't even, like, you know, when we cut this way and we do this, and it's all very granular, you know? I circled back again and asked him about, you know, you don't have a lot of practices during the regular season, and now you have this practice day that's coming off the worst loss of the season ahead of this high-profile game. Does that change the tenor of the practice? That's a question I asked him. And he basically said, you know, we're looking forward. He said, you know, we're not really focusing on the Knicks game. We're looking at Houston, and we're trying to really focus on our own identity, is basically what he said.
One of the interesting things about Houston is the Grizzlies have struggled with them all year, but Houston appears to be getting better.
Yeah, Houston is winning. You talk about the close games. It's not just against the Grizzlies. They're winning both the games they won against Cleveland were, like, single-possession games, basically, in the last minute. The game they won at Boston was a single-possession game in the last minute. The game they won at Atlanta. They're winning these games by 5 points or less, but they're doing it over and over and over again against good teams, right, which is, like, it's pretty impressive stuff. I do think Houston is getting better over the course of the season. Part of that is that Amen Thompson, who I think is a second-year player, he started the season as a bench guy, and now he's a starter. And not only is he a starter, he's the best player on the team.
Right.
He's just the best guy on the team. He's not the leading scorer.
Right.
He's not the biggest star, but he's the best player on the team.
And then Jalen Green's been hitting a million shots too. Right. He's been on a tear as well. And they've already whatever they got a bunch of guys.
They're super deep and they're super physical.
Yep. Do you think, by the way, they're one of the teams that mentioned in the, oh, they could go trade for De'Aaron Fox.
Right.
Do you see them as a possibility?
It really sounds like San Antonio, if you believe what you read and you try to piece together tea leaves from what you read. It sounds like San Antonio is where he wants to be. And San Antonio is very well equipped to make a deal, so it feels like that's what's going to happen.
And maybe in the
From a Grizzlies perspective, I think I would rather him go. I mean, I would rather him go east. But right, if you give me the choice of San Antonio or Houston, I might rather him go to San Antonio. So,
Okay. And who is? It is interesting. Someone's going to get left out tonight in the All-Star. That's going to be unveiled. The All-Star reserves.
Somebody's.
Yeah. But in terms of the West, the bigs in the West,
right?
I think Hollinger had Jaren as a wild card.
He had Jaren as his first reserve.
Oh, that's it. He had Jalen Williams as a guard. It was the way he did it.
I don't know if they can do that. He's not listed that way.
He said the coaches are not bound. At least his piece said the coaches are not bound by the same.
All right.
By the designations of the ballot. Right. Okay. And so he made him a guard.
Okay. And that would be helpful if they wanted to do that. I'm not convinced that's what's going to happen, but yeah.
But you are fairly convinced that Jaren is going to.
I think it's likely. I don't think it's certain. I also don't think, and I said this on the Potter Drew yesterday, this is not a high stakes thing to me, whether Jaren Jackson Jr. makes the All-Star game or not. Right. It'd be nice for him. It'd be nice for Grizzlies fans. He's made an All-Star team before.
Right.
He could miss the All-Star team and make the All-NBA, which I think Marc Gasol did. Maybe even Zach Randolph did as a Grizzly.
Right.
I don't think the fate of the universe rests on whether Jaren Jackson is named an All-Star.
Right. The fate of the universe does rest, as you have written before, on whether he's NBA, All-NBA. Not the fate of the universe, but
I'm putting off writing about it. It's that there's no need to write about it yet, but people are doing it.
Right.
And there's other, the trade deadline is happening. This Houston game is happening. I'll get into that when I get into that, which will be in a few weeks. But right. I think people have overdone that as an existential issue for the Grizzlies.
All right. You did have yesterday another entry in your Memphis library, your Central Memphis library. It was Craig Brewer's Hustle and Flow.
Yeah, so yesterday was the 20th anniversary of the 2005 Sundance Film Festival Awards ceremony in which two separate movies from Memphis, made in Memphis by Memphis filmmakers, won the two top prizes at the festival, The Greatest Day in Memphis Movie History, Ira Sachs' 40 Shades of Blue, which I'd already written about in the past, it's already in the library, won the Critics Award, the Jury Award, and Craig Brewer's Hustle and Flow won the Audience Award, and Memphis rose triumphant that day at Sundance, and so I used that as an excuse to put Hustle and Flow into the Essential Memphis Library.
So did you go rewatch it? How does it hold up?
I did rewatch it, although I rewatched it sort of while I was writing. I've seen it so many times, I didn't need to. To me, there are things about that movie that you could take as risible, and people, many critics at the time did.
Uh-huh.
I think that the power of the conviction that is brought to that movie powers through those issues for the most part. And I think what works best in the movie still works great. And those are the recording scenes, the scenes of the people in the room constructing this music, coming up with the beats, coming up with the hooks, making adjustments and sort of working together creatively. I think those scenes work beautifully.
Was it a commercial success?
Not as much as probably the studio wanted it to be. It was I think a then record, no longer a record, but a then record purchase at a Sundance for like $16 million. It probably made money, but it was not like a huge hit. But, you know, it got multiple Oscar nominations, including an Oscar win for Best Song, and it sort of lived on in the culture. And so it probably has done well post its theatrical run in terms of, you know, DVD and video at the time, and now streaming, and I think it's been a success.
And what was Craig Brewer's profile before that? Like, what was it, and what
he
did
had,
that do
he had
for
made
him?
One self-financed homemade movie, which I'll put into the library at some point, The Poor and Hungry, and that was sort of, it's funny, Hustle and Flow is sort of a movie about Craig Brewer making The Poor and Hungry, right? The mixtape that the character in Hustle and Flow is making that he is shopping around is Craig Brewer making The Poor and Hungry and shopping it around. It's really a movie about himself.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Huh?
And so he made this movie, The Poor and Hungry, for no money that showed, you know, locally. It was a big thing in Memphis, but, you know, that was it. But it was a calling card. It was what he shopped around to people to say, look what I did for $10,000. Right. Give me a budget and some actors. I can make you a movie. And so that's sort of where he came from.
And then since what's he done lately?
Lately? Well, he's currently working on a movie, a director for hire thing with Hugh Jackman. And I can't remember the actress. And it's sort of a based on a true story, music thing. He did The Coming to America 2, Roman numeral 2. He did Dolomite, which also starred Eddie Murphy. He stayed working, you know?
Yeah, he stayed working. All right. Big game tonight, Chris. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And we will talk to you about it tomorrow. Thanks very much. So we're going to play Right in the Right Trivia. We don't have Kevin Cerrito because he lost his voice. But the show must go on. And so we will take – this is the fourth game against the Rockets tonight, right? Are we going to take game caller number four, or is it going to be the first win versus the Rocker tonight? I think we'll take caller number one because it's going to be the first win against the Rockets tonight. 445-0929, 445-0929. You got to be righter than right or – play honorably. And what are we giving away for a fabulous grand prize?
Jeff, we got two tickets to see Kane Brown. Win them before you can buy them. July the 25th at Bank Plus Amphitheater. Tickets will go on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m.
I will be the trivia master, for good or for ill, when we return. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Kevin Cerrito, get well, Kevin. He did your show yesterday.
No, he actually had another engagement. So Justin Moore hosted with me yesterday.
That's right. I heard Justin yesterday. I heard Justin yesterday talking about he was invoking the Hubie Brown.
Yes,
the Hubie Brown
strength of numbers.
It was five games a year. Five games a year, you're gonna lose.
Yep.
5 games a year, you're gonna win. Whatever it was. And this was the question was whether the New York game, the Knicks
is
game,
one of
was
just five. One of
or whether it was more than that, whether it was more telling.
Correct.
Anyway, Kevin Cerrito is down for the count, has lost his voice. And so I am stepping in as trivia master, Jeffrey. We're giving away a fabulous prize. It's Cindy's birthday.
Happy birthday, Cindy.
She arranged for us to have what as a fabulous prize?
Jeff, two tickets to see Kane Brown at Bank Plus Amphitheater. July the 25th of this year. Tickets will go on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m.
So you don't have to win. You just have to play honorably. Although, because I'm asking the questions, you greater likelihood that you're going to win. And it's an unofficial, right, Jeffrey? This is unofficial. Who do we have as our contestant?
Jeff, let's welcome Michael in East Memphis to the program.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Jeff?
Good, but you're stuck with me. So there you go. The way
probably
the
better.
Game works is... let's see. I ask a series of questions. You tell me if you want question one or question two. We'll then go to Jeffrey. He'll get the other one. There is one steal allowed throughout the course of the contest. We do four regulation rounds, and then you get to wager as many points you've earned for overtime, and we see who wins. All right. So, Michael, the first theme is... I got a couple of Greenland questions because we're going to be expanding into Greenland and into Panama. And so I got some Greenland questions and I got some Panama questions. So
my parents are advanced scouting.
Do you want question one or question two, Michael?
I'm going to go with two.
Question two. Okay, the national sport of Greenland is multiple choice, speed skating, team handball, soccer, or rugby.
Team handball.
Team handball is correct. Nailed it. Absolutely. Jeffrey.
Congratulations, Michael.
The national meal of Greenland is, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's S-U, if you need to know this, if this will help, it's S-U-A-A-S-A-T. Okay? That's the national meal.
S-U-A-A-S-A-T.
Okay? It is a soup. It is a soup. And it has a particular kind of meat in it. Is it reindeer, seal, lemming, or the Arctic hare?
All right. One more time.
The national meal of Greenland is S-U-A-A-S-A-T. That's the name of it. It is a soup. It has a particular kind of meat in it. Is it reindeer, seal, lemming, or the Arctic hare?
I'm going to say seal.
Seal is correct. And I got to say, a little tougher than Michael's. I thought it was tougher than Michael's.
Well, I literally just had two S's in it. So I just
that's why I spelled it out for you. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Okay, question. Another Greenland question. Michael, do you want question one or two?
Let's go with one this time.
Okay. Greenland is between two oceans. What are they?
Arctic and Atlantic.
God, that's impressive. And Jeffrey's got the easier one here, just randomly, uh-huh. The way it worked. I'll just tell you, Jeffrey, who currently owns Greenland?
Denmark.
Denmark is correct. So there you go. All right. So just the way it fell, I knew that was the easier one. Hey, I had to make these up on the fly. Now we move to the Panama Canal questions. Do you want question one or question two, Michael?
Let's go two.
Two. Okay. We know that the U.S. built the Panama Canal. What country tried first and failed?
Spain.
That is incorrect. Jeffrey?
I'm not going to steal France.
France is correct,
okay.
But you did not steal. And so there you go. Okay, Jeffrey. With what oceans does the Panama Canal connect?
Ooh, I don't know. So the Pacific is one. But the other's a sea, though, right? The Caribbean's a sea.
Very good, Jeffrey. It's part of the Atlantic Ocean, but it's the Caribbean Sea is the correct answer. You're exactly right. Okay. You nailed it. So Jeffrey has the lead. I have to keep score, too, right? I have to keep score, too.
No, I got it. It's 3-2.
3-2.
No steal's been played.
No steal has been played. And so we have one more question here. Do you want one or two, Michael?
Let's go with two.
Okay. The maximum boat width within 20 feet. Tell me how wide a boat can be going down the Panama Canal within 20 feet either direction. How wide could that boat be in the Panama Canal?
Let's go with 135.
Oh, it's 160.
Well,
can I
have stolen?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Jeffrey. I blew it. Mm-hmm. This is what happens when you got an amateur running the thing. Would you have guessed that?
I was going to guess 150.
Sorry, dude. I blew it. You know what it is? You know what it is?
Mm-hmm.
I feel Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Bad spot.
I felt that with you.
Bad spot. Here's your question, Jeffrey. It's still
3-2.
3-2. How long, within 100 feet, how long can a boat be heading down the Panama Canal?
Feet, right?
Yes, feet. Exactly right.
All right, I'll say like 1150.
It is 1200 feet, Jeffrey. You nailed it. Absolutely nailed it.
I listened to Charles.
All right, that's very impressive. All right. And now finals of the score is what?
It is 4-2 currently.
4-2.
And steel is still out there.
And the steel is still out there. Let me see how many Jeffrey wants to wager. All right. And now we'll go to, so the last question, it's National Croissant Day. Michael, how many do you want to wager, Jeff? Michael, both yours, I take it?
Two.
Yeah, okay. It's National Croissant Day. Do you want question one or question two?
Question one.
Question one. Okay. The croissant is thought to be... Croissant? Jeffrey, go ahead and say it.
Croissant.
Say it. Okay. It's thought to be French. It's not really. It came to France from another country. Is that country Austria, Germany, Switzerland, or Luxembourg?
I'm going to go with Germany.
Ah, you want to steal, Jeffrey? I'm not going to jump ahead. Yeah, I'm going to jump on this.
It's Austria.
Did you actually know that?
Yes.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got five.
I now have five.
All right. We got to wrap this up, Jeffrey. The Burger King, of course, is the purveyor of mm-hmm. the croissant in the United States, the croissant breakfast sandwiches. Within 3 years either direction, what year did Burger King introduce the croissant sandwich?
I'll say 1990.
That is not correct. You want to steal, Michael?
Might yeah, well. I'll go for a steal. I'll go 96.
1983. It's been around longer than you think. It's really kind of deep in our big part of our national. Do you think he played honorably, Jeffrey?
I most certainly did.
I do. Is he going to get the tickets?
He did indeed.
Thank you very much, Mike. Appreciate it,
Michael.
There you go. This was odd, Jeffrey. I was the trivia master, and you nevertheless prevailed.
Yeah, I think it's also because you farmed out questions.
No, actually, none of those questions. I looked up all those questions during the breaks.
Well, then maybe I'm turning the corner here.
Maybe I shouldn't have done French. Like, croissant seems to be a sweet spot for you. Mm-hmm. You keep saying that. We're going to take a break. Back in a moment. 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. We got big games tonight, Jeffrey. Are you... All right, so when you really care about a game, this is my experience. I experienced it recently. When you really care about a game, you feel it in your stomach the day of the game.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Don't you
big
feel
it? Big game butterflies.
Like, it is big game, but even if, and this is, even if you're not technically playing in the game.
Sure.
You can still have big game butterflies. So, do you get big game butterflies?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Do you have, and should Grizzlies fans or Tiger fans have big game butterflies? Let's be honest. There's no excuse for a Tiger fan to have big game butterflies today, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't
just
have
go down there and demolish them.
I do think it's natural to have some anxiety
you lost
because
three straight. Well, to me, there is an anxiety. It's one of the problems with Memphis basketball now. It's not an exercise in joy. Like, look at Ole Miss right now. Okay,
sure.
It's difficult. It's a hell of a gauntlet they have, right? But last game because they kind of had to beat Texas because they just lost three in a row.
Yeah.
But whatever. You win games. You got another big one coming. You're like, every game is not. There's joy to be had in every game, and there's despair to be had in every game, and you get nervous about it. But
I think also it's true this. I think based on the net right now, almost every SEC team.
Squad one.
Or quad two, depending on the location.
With Memphis, it's just an exercise in anxiety. Like, it's like, oh, my God, we can't lose this. 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 With very little corresponding joy. Now, the UAB game, even if it required us to fool ourselves into thinking that UAB was good, there was joy there. There was joy to be had at that UAB game. A lot of things happened that gave you joy. Dane Danger going off the way he did, just reasserting yourself, demolishing them. Like, there was joy to be had. I don't think...
Eye test.
I don't think...
You know what I mean? Like, forget whether or not UAB, like you said, maybe the reason why they're doing better now is because they're getting into conference play, but it's like, you clearly saw the team play better,
right?
Which makes you feel better.
Tonight, there's relief to be had. Like, if they come out and assert themselves and do to Tulane what they did to Florida Atlantic on the road, right, for example, like, that's my Tigers. You know, there is relief to be had, but you're not going to be jumping up and down in joy because they beat Tulane. You're just not, okay? Now, big game jitters, big game butterflies, should you have? I kind of find that I do. And again, I'm, of course, a neutral, highly trained, objective observer of the world of sports. Wouldn't possibly let my emotions get involved. But I find, despite that I have a little bit of big game jitters around the Rockets and the Grizzlies tonight.
I definitely do. Because
it just feels like something's at stake, man.
Well, and I think I get it. It's January. This has nothing to do with whether or not they will in the playoffs. But, like, I kind of pay attention to how do you do when the pressure's on. And it does feel like there's pressure tonight.
At some point, we are asking ourselves, it's just true. Is this team a paper tiger? Is it a paper grizzly? Is it a team that can only beat bad teams?
There's fraud adjacent.
There is real data. Just 1-5 against the top three in the both conferences. That is what it is. I guess it's a small sample size, but it's not at one game. It's six games. It's six games against really good teams, and you've won one of them. Like, that's
a really big 2 weeks.
It is really starting to accumulate, and we are really starting to think. You want to know that this offense isn't just an offense that works against crappy ass or even against
the average and worse.
Yeah, that does not. We want to know that this thing works. We want to know that this group works. We want to know that they're not soft. We want to know, like, don't we? Like, all of that.
Absolutely.
You want them to stand up. And just honestly, you want the emotional satisfaction of beating the damn Rockets.
Like, when
Dylan Brooks went to the Rockets, they weren't supposed to be better than you.
No.
Steven Adams went to the Rockets. You weren't supposed to be helping the enemy. All of a sudden, they're coming back into Memphis and punking you tonight? That would be embarrassing. I think big game jitters are appropriate, and I think this is important. And I think it's not just important. It is clearly important emotionally for me and for you and for, I think, a lot of Grizzlies fans out there. I think it's important emotionally for the Grizzlies.
I definitely do, because it's very clear to me that the Rockets have an impact on them. Like, when Jaren said after the Minnesota game, we really needed that. I think that's a direct reflection of how much loss at Houston mattered. They split it was two toss-up games on the road. Like, it wasn't like a 1-1 result was bad. If anything,
but it's funny, as Chris pointed out, they got punked in the first game, and then the other home game here, which I covered, they were blown out in that game.
We talked about it. It was
fouling Houston missed
Adams.
A million foul shows to set down there, and they enabled them to get close, but they were punked in that game.
Yeah.
And so you want to know that this team isn't fraudulent. And that is what is at stake. And yes, it's on national TV too. And maybe we don't care about it as much as we did when we were just a fledgling franchise, but still care about it. And then of course we have the additional drama. It's always drama of Ja and his shoulder popping up suddenly, a questionable. It feels like he's going to go tonight, doesn't it?
My
That's
gut
what questionable
says
normally
yes.
means.
Like, if he were to have been downgraded to doubtful.
The good news is that if he loses, he's
yes,
got a little bit
built
of an
excuse. No, the
and
great
if he
thing
wins,
about,
and if he wins, I played through it.
Heroic.
Baby. Yeah.
I mean, just overcoming the odds.
I'm going for the
it.
Hero
yes,
story tonight.
Absolutely.
So, two really important games, one of which is, in fact, in terms of its impact on the future, is more important because Tigers can't lose this if they want to maintain their seeding. Whatever, if they want to maintain, you know, they're in the end, we want them to be a top 4 or 5 seed, right?
Yeah.
And so you can't drop too many of these.
What's unclear to me, how many losses can
they can't sustain.
Right.
Yeah. But the problem is, if you lose this one, it's not a guarantee that you won't lose more, right? So
for sure.
So in the end, you want to postpone.
Well, and honestly, it's like, part of it obviously matters. Like, do you lose to Tulsa at home? Well, if you lose to Tulsa at home,
right,
that sinks
yes,
you
right,
more.
Like, more than this,
but it does
right.
feel like a lot of these losses kind of, you know, I think probably they can't take a whole lot more than two if the goal is top five.
So in terms of practical impact, that game matters more. In terms of what we all, you know, in terms of psychologically, what feels like the big game. There is one big game tonight. It is on TNT at 8:30, the Grizzlies versus the Rockets. So
and
we shall
like,
see.
The
what,
series with the Rockets is like becoming a thing.
It's definitely becoming a thing. I'm beginning to hate them. I feel that growing.
Yeah.
I feel that
which
growing.
Which is awesome. That's what sports needs. That's what makes it fun.
I feel that growing in somewhere deep inside. So there was other news, by the way. And the other news was that ESPN has exercised its option
correct.
To continue to broadcast the ACC, right?
Correct. So the way, whenever we always would talk about the television deal with ESPN and ACC, and they would always say, well, it runs through 2036. That wasn't technically true. ESPN had the option to pick up from 27 through 36, those remaining years. They could have exercised the option not to do so. So where this is significant is, this kind of gives the ACC at least like stability in the sense that they know what their TV deal is. But now the entire conversation shifts to what is the result of the lawsuits of Clemson and Florida State?
Right.
And does that pave the way for
people
to leave?
People are still trying to get the hell out of there.
Correct.
Other thing, by the way, that we never talked about was, speaking of TV, in the end, the national championship game in college football was the third lowest TV audience since 2014. Now, TV audiences are going down, whatever else, but that's not true of the NFL. So we can proclaim the playoff and everything else to be a great success, and I think it was a success. Is the lesson there, and I think this is the lesson, it went on too long.
I think it went on too long. I'm also open to the idea that it was largely two Midwest teams. And so because you didn't really have regional balance.
Right. It's funny. It was barely better in TV ratings than like Ohio State, Oregon.
Yeah.
Now, that's not two Midwest teams, but that's two Big Ten.
And it was also January 1.
It's barely bigger than. Is the solution, and maybe we'll talk about this more another time, but if you made week zero, week one, and then you made, you know, the semifinals would be played on New Year's Day, and then you'd wrap everything up before the NFL playoffs begin. I gather the problem with that, the problem with moving everything a week earlier, is Thanksgiving weekend, because TV likes all the rivalry stuff on that TV. It gives them lots of stuff.
It's a lot of inventory.
A lot of inventory.
It actually rates pretty well.
Whereas if it was just conference championship week, you only got 10 games for Thanksgiving weekend, and they don't want that.
I mean, my big deal is, I mean, another big problem is that ESPN owns the playoff, and so ESPN is working around its other schedule. So, for instance, when you had the 16-game NFL season, they were able to play the championship game a week earlier, but now that week, because of the 17-game schedule, has become Super Wild Card Weekend, and like it's taken away dates from them.
TV, man. All right, big nights tonight. Jeffy, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Drew Hill will join their program today. Cobb will be with me on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Eric at 2:40. Jason with us at 3:30. It's Thursday, so Jeff will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
We hope Kevin Cerrito regains his voice. Get well, Kevin. And we will be back tomorrow. For now, our work is done.